This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
But as he's about to draw, you see, like, the entire MTG mid-card team, including Namsung Wook and all these other guys, crowding around, and I'm just like, it just felt like the Bane, like, the Bonfire of the Dam moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just...
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play idiot. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mindflayer.
Scotty.
And I cashed that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some Modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some Modern. And it's like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play Modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey, everyone, welcome to episode 234 of the A-Team Podcast. Mr. Scotty Mack here, joined, as always, by the full complement of my three best friends in the whole fucking world. I have with us the one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend, the king of the motherfucking North, Jay Boosh. What's going on, Jay?
Hello. How much?
Wicked.
Yeah, what's happening with you?
I am ready to have a good show tonight. I'm a little pumped up. We got lots to talk about this week, and it should be good.
You're fucking jacked. You're Jack
fucking
Ryan.
Fucking Jack Jackson. I have, of course, my PIC, my number one resource for all judging and unbelievable runs in GPs. The man that I go to for the gossip that happens in the community, because he, of course, has his ear to the grindstone. Jeremy Scumbag Schofield. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing very well. That was a very interesting introduction.
I was really just kind of reaching for straws there. Could you tell?
Yeah. You were just grasping straws. I'm sorry. Jay, I will do something meaningful to give you something to comment with.
The problem is that Jay ruined my momentum by talking to me. I was on the roll,
that,
and then he, like, completely unseated me. I was ready to go. And then he's like, oh, yeah, and how are you? I'm like, fuck.
No, you should have just
it's
moved
like you
on.
You came out in the street, you got your strut going, and
you just moved on.
Kind of peacocking at people,
you know,
and stuff
like
that.
It's like you're pulling the John Travolta, and you're strutting down, you know, you can't tell by the way I use my, you know? And he's, like, strutting down, and all of a sudden he trips over his disco shoes. Like, that's what it felt like.
And
it was terrible.
Record scratch.
And, like, his white disco suit just totally shredded. Anyways. Sorry. I'll do better next time. And, of course, we have with us the last member. Some might argue the first member of the A-Team. Last to speak, but always first on the scoreboard, Mr. KYT. How's it going, buddy?
Man, I like that.
Yeah?
But first on the scoreboard.
Well, I mean, one of us is going to a Pro Tour in a couple weeks. Just fucking me.
A couple weeks already?
Well, it's 3 weeks or something. But yeah.
Next month. There's still a good month.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's pretty awesome. But yeah, so we're back. Here we are. In for another week. Some of us played some Magic. Some of us didn't. Some of us went to GPs. Some of us didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, but let's talk about something real quick. Since we promised we would talk about each and every one of the video comments that got posted on ManaDeprived.com.
Oh, yes!
Let's talk about Mr. Doug Potter's epic, amazing... Super awesome.
Fucking DP.
Yeah, fucking DP. Yeah. I like that. That's freaking awesome. That's not going away anytime soon.
Nope.
Nope. So
I feel like I got penetrated in both my ear holes.
I know, right? Yeah, he just like came in both sides at once. But it was great. Doug left us a really nice comment, and we had some things that we need to address that came out of that. First and foremost, I'd like to actually own up to Doug's pseudo calling me out. I think that during our conversation, Jer, about wanting to play better and so on and so forth, it harkens back, this comment that Doug made harkens back to a discussion that we had many moons ago about good practice versus bad practice.
Okay.
And so he made the comment to say, I can't tell if you just ever get unlucky or if the deck's actually a nut and so on and so forth. And so here's my stance on all of that. So let's preface all of this with my greatest skill as it pertains to Magic is identifying decks for a minute and tuning a deck to beat a specific like set of decks. The execution of those plans often fails to be grasped by me, right? So I often am able to come up with a good plan for the team that the team executes to success that I intermittently find success with, because often I'm just still out of good practice and I will make bad plays or mistakes or whatever. And Modern as a format is one where the cards are so very powerful, and a lot of the decks in the format have the ability, to like capitalize on a mistake that is made by your opponent and just turn the game around. Like it's very much like Legacy that way, where you can have, a bad turn or get, the bad end of an exchange, and then you've lost that game, where you give Dredge that one turn and they just have it and they go off, Splinch of Twin is a good indication of that. Scapeshift is a good indication of that. Sometimes a natural turn 3 Tron with fucking Karn is that, and so my discussions about variants, I found that, Team Geist is a mid-range deck. It's like straight up, let's call a spade a spade. It's a mid-range deck. It's a mid-range aggro control burn deck, which is basically what it does. Or I'm like completely fucking that up. So it's a mid-range deck with aggro control elements whose game plan is to utilize burn spells and tempo spells and resilient threats like Geist of Saint Traff to end your opponent's game very quick. That's what the deck does. And there are times in metagames where that strategy is unreal. One of the advantages it has is it's able to play most of its game plan on a flash axis, which can interfere with timing of other decks of its like, similar to Splinter Twin, and also then, being good against control decks, in that you get to kind of like take the tempo and play on their turn, which is making them spend mana and resources on their turn, creating holes for you to like resolve cards like Geist Stain Trap, which are very difficult traditionally for decks like this to deal with. So the deck is very good. It has some weaknesses, obviously, in the metagame, but every deck does. I think that if you were to go through a Modern metagame breakdown, even in Copenhagen, right? And there are, like, every deck that's played, if it's being played 13% of the time, it's fucking huge. Like, that's a really strong representation or a big show-up, at a Modern event. Whereas, you could have decks that are running all the way down to, 4% or 5%, and, they're all well-known decks that are all over the place. So I feel, like as I've always felt with mid-range decks, that there are ways that you can build the deck to make it unbelievable. You can easily make a deck like that the best deck in the room. The colors that are available to the sideboard cards and all that sort of stuff, if you've got the right plan and you've got the right meta mix-up and you get the right matchups, you're going to ace the tournament. But the same can be said about basically every deck in the format.
I guess, my other issue that I kind of agree with Doug on is that, I don't think I've ever heard anyone except for you and your cronies talk about Team Geist.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's, at what point are you Smitty?
Okay.
I don't think that's fair because there are other people out there. Half of the drama around Team Geist is Jeff Hoogland kind of putting his stamp on it.
Okay. But, I do remember that specific event.
Mm-hmm.
Has that I don't know. I've never heard it talked about in any tournament capacity. Like, sure. I've never heard, and I'm not saying that means it's automatically bad. I'm just saying I guess maybe what Doug and maybe what I and some other people have struggle with is that it's difficult to not just tune out when you hear Team Geist, Team Geist, Team Geist, Team Geist, because it's all you talk about in terms of deck, and I don't know if I've ever heard of it doing anything other than what you do with it. And then so sometimes I'm like, well, is this just your pet? Like, are you just so attached to it? Because some people are like that, right? Like you know, fucking Paul Rietzel hasn't done anything in a very long time, and his pet is Boros, and he still tries to force it. Or, you know, or like Shaheen trying to force Esper, and then, you know, you follow his tweets, and he's like, oh, these plus this, and minus two of that, and plus one of these, and then it's still like, it's just still not good. It's still not better than X Dragons or Red Green Atarka or whatever, right?
Sure, sure.
So then it's like, okay, well, is that what's happening? Or, like, and I don't know, you know, I don't know, I guess.
I liken it to something like Merfolk. Now, going back to, like, when I played GP San Diego, like, back when Scapeshift was doing his thing and eggs were still a thing.
Yeah. Okay.
There was still Merfolk's decks successful, cashing day twos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, had they broken through? They never broke through, but they were still doing good. They could still compete. Now, you know, maybe they're like a tier two deck, maybe a tier 1.5, you know, without kind of like getting into the ego of things.
Sure.
But they just were not in a place that they could break through, be it metagame was poor for them or whatever the case may be. Now you're looking at Merfolk's and it's just putting up solid results. Like it's eking its way into the, well, it's in the conversation now, but it's been working its way in.
Well,
and that's what I
kind
of feel like with this deck.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it won Copenhagen. It's top eighted and like,
so is that because like
a bunch of like,
is that because the card pool doesn't change as much in Modern? So like you could have a tier 1.5 deck that is consistently what tops 128 is day 2 or something.
Yeah, well I mean you got to look at it this way.
It's never doing anything because like it just can't get the right cards to overcome the meta. Like how different is like the deck that wins this week versus the deck that won last week in terms of like numbers? Like are there any out of left field decks that are winning ever?
Well, yeah, so that's the thing, is if you actually take a look at the three major Modern events that have occurred in the last 3 months,
yeah,
right? So like GP Charlotte, Copenhagen, and then the Invitational.
Sure.
The top eights are all completely different. Like,
okay,
the decks are radically different from one to the next. And I think that Modern as a format in general is one of those formats where your matchups do matter. And that's what a lot of PB's gripe about it is. You know, like, there are some scenarios and some matchups and, like, some variance pieces that come up. And it's just the nature of Modern. Like, there's a card like Blood Moon, right? Where your opponent plays a Blood Moon and you just happen to have not drawn any fetch lands. But, like, you have a hand that you have to keep otherwise because it's, like, you're not going down any further or whatever. And your opponent just plays the Blood Moon and you straight up fucking lose. Like, that's just the format, kids. You know? Mm-hmm. You know, there's scenarios where Splinter Twin, you, like, you have a hand that's not very, you know, that's somewhat interactive, and sometimes they just have it, you know? Sometimes your affinity player has turn two Etch Champion with plating Smacky for 12. Like, that happens, you know? And I think
that's why I don't like Modern, right? I've always said that.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that that's just part of, like I said, that's part of understanding the format and part of accepting it. So there's things like that where there are variance things where that stuff happens, but then there are also other pieces of it where, like I said earlier, if you make a small mistake, like you misplay one turn or like make a decision.
I forgot to play against Blood Moon.
I should have fetched on turn one and set myself back a turn because then I wouldn't be totally fucked at this point. Things like that. Yeah. And so.
So is Team Geist in that zone? Like,
is it
a top deck that hasn't broken through like Merfolk? Like, or is it just like,
I think it's easily a tier 1.5 deck. I mean, there's a lot of people
like,
that
does
play
that
it.
Mean anything in a format where there's 100 decks? Like, well, that means something
Tron is
standard.
Tron's a tier 1.5 deck until it's good, and then it's the top deck. And then the next week, everyone brings their land hate, and then it's crap. Like, Modern is becoming like Legacy in that regard, right? It's like, if everyone sleeps on the Dredge hate in the tournament, one Dredge player shows
right,
up and owns
okay.
the day, right? So by nature of the format, that's how it is. Now, like I said, Geist is a mid-range deck, so if we can predict the format appropriately, have the right sideboard cards, And this is like any deck. Like, this could be Abzan. This could be fucking any deck.
Sure, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, so here's what it is, and if you have the right cyber cards and you get your matchups done right and you play perfectly, or you play, you know, the best you can, and it's good enough, then yeah, easily. Like, Jason Clark, right, a buddy of mine, real genius on Twitter, has been playing the deck just longer than I have. Like, basically, since Modern became a thing, because that was his deck in Standard, right? He was playing Blue, White, Red, Flash.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Right? Because that's basically what this deck is. except that you get to upgrade with cards like Lightning Bolt, Lightning Helix, Remand, and Snapcaster. Like, you still got Snapcaster Mage and shit like that, right? Like, it's like, that's all the deck is. And you've got great mana, so it's fine. And you got Celestial Colonnade. Like, it's fucking, that's what the deck does. And so that deck, like it was in Standard, was really good for a while. And it was the top deck, and then people adjusted, and then it wasn't. But there's still people that play it. But I think in Modern, it's one of those formats. Yeah, I'm almost finished. In Modern, it's one of those formats where it rewards you for investing your time into a specific deck and understanding the format and the matchups.
Yeah.
And so I decided very early on in Modern that I wanted to stop jumping around. Like, there's so many decks, and there's so many cards that are get so expensive so fast that it's really almost, like, unreasonable to, you know, for a guy like me in my position to expect to just own all of Modern and play whatever deck I want.
Yeah, for sure. The issue that I think some people could be having with what you're saying, not that it's not, like, true. I'm not saying anything about that. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You could absolutely be right. But I think one of the issues that people have with saying that is that, like, why isn't it, like, Tron that comes back year after year? Why isn't it, like, Splinter Twin that comes back year after year? Like what you're saying seems to make sense to me.
Sure.
It does. In that, like, you're like, well, you know, Modern rewards you for time investment and for meta reading and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like, there's still card or decks like Splinter Twin, which have been around since all of Modern and are still around and are always around. So, like, is that just the popular deck this time and people are just, you know, hanging on the bandwagon? Or is that, like, it's better than Geist and you need to be impartial?
So there's one key element which we haven't really brought up yet. And that is that Team Geist is inherently a fair deck.
Oh yeah, that is terrible. I hate playing fair deck.
Jund is inherently
play fair deck.
So Jund is inherently a fair deck.
Yes.
Right? Abzan.
Is it?
Fair deck. Absolutely.
Oh, I guess it is. That's why
it's fair deck, right?
It's fair because they banned it away.
Well, yeah, but that's the point, right? Like,
even before it was banned,
it's just fundamentally a fair deck. Whereas cards like Splinter Twin is a fucking unlimited combo. If you don't answer it right now, you lose.
Yeah.
Right. So that's an unfair deck. And things like those ridiculous combo decks, like Eggs, is an unfair deck. You know, Amulet combo,
right?
An unfair deck because it's doing things that are inherently broken and warped as it pertains to the rules of Magic.
Right.
Scapeshift. Scapeshift is just a bad example of a combo deck, but, like, it's got this combo kill element, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
what you're saying.
Yeah, and so that's the reason. So a lot of pros, because not a lot of people invest that much time into Modern, right? Like, in certain terms of the pro community,
there are some
that do. And, I mean, like, Birthing Pod was the unfairest fair deck ever, you know? But that's the sort of thing. So
how come those are getting banned, but, like, Splinter Twin's not getting banned?
So I think Splinter Twin is the absolute ceiling which WotC is willing to tolerate in terms of combo, because it's a turn 4 combo.
Right.
Right? That requires a creature and another combo.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. We're like, turn 4, anything faster than turn 4 they don't want, and it is, not easily disruptible, but it's easily enough disruptible, I guess.
Yeah. So that's the reason why a lot of people identify Modern as a turn 3 format.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing something inherently broken, then you're not doing it well. You're not doing it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why a lot of people are kind of, like, straying away from that, because your game plan is to play a fair game with no discard spells, and you're going to lean on resolving a 3-mana sorcery speed threat.
Yeah, then that's a big problem people struggle with in Cube when they draft, if they're new to Cube, is they just draft a deck that just on paper is like, how do you beat me? I'm playing an awesome fucking deck. And then it's because you're not doing anything unfair. Like, yeah, all your cards are good, but you're not doing anything unfair. You're not breaking the rules.
Correct.
And if you're not breaking the rules when you play Cube, or apparently when you play Modern, then you're not, you can't compete because people are breaking the rules.
Yeah, and the only way that you get to compete is, like I said, through identifying things like appropriate metagaming, understanding the format, knowing your game plan, knowing how to play your deck against their decks. Like, that's the sort of thing where you can edge those points. Now, I mean, to say that it hasn't been performing, I mean, on the Grand Prix stage, like, sure. I mean, Pro Tour, Born of the Gods, the French guy, Jeremy Dazzani played Blue Eye Red Geist, and he did great. But that's like Pro Tour, Born of the Gods. But to say that, like, the deck's been around that long, Larry just missed top 8 at GP Worcester. You know, like, he was literally, like, one match out of top 8. So that would have put him there. And it's won a whole bunch of the Modern IQs. at Star City, and it was consistently in the top eight of the Star City Games premium modern IQs for the last year. Jason won States with it this year, Modern States. So now he's qualified for two IQs, or two Invitationals this year, or three or four, or whatever. So, like, the deck puts up results, but it doesn't put up, like, it's not those results. Does that make sense? And it's because of the fact it's not widely adopted because it's not an inherently broken deck. It's completely fair. So.
Right.
Anyway, but suffice to say, like, the deck's good. It's inherently fair, so if that's not your thing, then that's not your thing. But, yeah, that's what you gotta do. So.
Well, I don't know if you defended your point really well, but you definitely answered the question. So you either...
You get points for that.
Yeah, no, what I mean is just like, because I don't know anything about Modern, it's basically what I mean. So yeah. you either convinced everyone, and you definitely defended your point, or you tried really hard, but you actually proved the point for somebody else. I don't know how Modern works, but you did a really great job, because I understand it better.
That's good.
I think it's one of those things that, like, you just have to see the results. The results have to come. But if you keep positive, you keep testing, you keep doing what you're doing, the results should come.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, like I said, there are better players than me that have picked it up that continue to do well, right? So, I mean, that's what it comes down to. But as far as where I'm at, like, I'm on the receiving end of both of the both misplays that get capitalized on, or, you know, and they're, like, subtle and stupid, like, little things. Or it does happen sometimes that I just get blood-mooned out of a game. Like, not much you can do about it. You draw, you know, shocks and colonnades. And turn three, you get blood mooned and you lose. Like,
yeah,
fuck all, it happens, right? So, yeah. So when I talk about variance and stuff, that's a lot of what it comes down to. And plus, I mean, if you draw 12 lands in a row, that there's nothing I can do about.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what do you think, KIT? You also play Modern?
Yeah, I play a bit. I haven't played in a while.
Afraid of this deck?
I enjoy your questions. From they're good questions because you don't know anything about Modern. Am I afraid of this deck?
Because the way I look at it, I guess, yeah, answer that question. The way I look at it, too, is just like, I've never played Modern. So if there's GP Calgary, and let's say they choose Modern because they're making a grave mistake, and then and we can't convince them otherwise because the Ravens get shot down with arrows, and I have to play Modern. Then it's like, well, what do I play? Like, and Scotty will say, play fucking Team Dice. It's awesome. And all
that. No, I won't. I absolutely won't. I will not tell you that.
But I mean, like, what I mean is just like, will I be like, okay, like, am I going to have a better chance playing Splinter Twin, which I also don't know how it works? Am I going to have a better chance playing fucking KYT Boggles? I don't know how that works. I mean, I probably would because I play Hexproof, but you know what I mean? Like, so what I mean is just like, I don't know anything about Modern, so that's why we ask these questions. It's not to challenge Scotty and make him feel bad about.
No, you know,
constantly.
Is that what we're doing?
No.
And that's what I want to make sure. But yeah, so are you ever afraid of that deck? Like, are you?
Jeremy's like, fuck, we keep making fun of one finish.
Scotty refers to the deck as like a mid-range deck, whereas like every time like I've run into it, because there's like, it's Lewis Laskin, right? Is that kind of where the deck came from?
I don't even remember.
Okay, all I remember is that when this deck, like, this
so
deck,
Larry,
the original...
No, Larry Swayze.
He's, Swayze, yes. Swayze
he's
won,
on
like,
team
back-to-back
guys,
online
on team
PTQs.
Guys, he's, like, he's one of our
absolutely.
Guys, yeah.
Yeah, but the deck itself, like, one of the early, early, early iterations of it, like, won back-to-back PTQs online.
Back when
like, Saturday
Elf,
and a Sunday.
Back when Bloodbraid Elf and Deathrite Shaman were both legal.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it went and it crushed, and I remember at that time... Looking at the deck, it's something I picked up, I built online, I played with for a little bit. And it was a creature decked out burn deck.
Yep.
Like, that's the way that I always saw it in my head, okay. Is that this is a burn deck. My creatures, if they get their damage in, that's great. If they get 2 points, like if they get to attack twice, I'm way ahead. It's kind of like that Goblin Guide thing where it's like, if Goblin Guide gets 2 points of damage, awesome. If it gets 4 points of damage, that's 4 points of damage for one mana, one card. That's fantastic. If it can get a third attack in, you're not losing. You know, it's just like, that's the way that the deck is kind of designed to work. Right. So those guys there, we went away from some of the iffy burn spells and stuff like that, and we just went with mythics. So that's how I always look at that deck. So like, if I ever do run into it online or something like it online, it's just like, all right, you know, I've got to trade with everything. I've got to kill off these creatures because I know that there's a lot more burn coming behind me. I know that I'm going to see a Ambush Viper Snapcaster Mage because they just need to get 2 points of damage in with him.
Yep.
If they can get 2 points of damage in with him, they'll get 2 points of damage in with him.
Right.
And that's where it's going to be like every card in their hand is just looking to go to my face. And if it can connect once, he's got enough damage output that I should be out of the game. Not to mention anything that I'm going to do big, he can still go Bolt and Remand and kind of set me back while he's wailing on me with like a Snapcaster Mage. So he can kind of keep the punches going and play a little bit of a tempo game on top of it. So it's stepping away from the burn deck, but it plays out very, very similar. So that's what I don't like about that, is that if you're no good against burn decks, you might be worse off against this. It's a touch bit slower, but it has a lot more tricks.
Yeah, it's a lot more game. It has a very linear game plan, and the tools that it has can be very effective. And understanding sort of when you need to start killing creatures to clear the way and when you can go to the face, when you should go to the face, or two, like, that's really important to understand too, and when you need to be the aggressive deck versus when you need to be the tempo flash deck. But like, it has all those little flexibilities and all those axes, which I really like. But Jerry, you put it like really, really well. You're absolutely right. I mean, I've been saying for a long time that Geist of St. Traft is a red card, and that's why.
Yeah, and yeah, that's just how the deck's always kind of played out. So it's one of those spots where it's like, where do we need a teched out burn deck? Where can that work? And it's just like, we need control to kind of be a little bit better, because I think that might be your bread and butter to beat up.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that makes some sense.
So sorry, answer your question.
Yeah,
Jay,
sorry to interrupt you.
I'm not, maybe, I felt it was more powerful, like, in its time of success. As time has gone, some of the combo decks have streamlined themselves really well, and, like, the initial builds of Amulet Bloom, from what I know, did not play the optimal level of amount of Ancient Stirrings. So it's not nowhere near as consistent as it is now.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's like one of the best decks to play. I said it before Alex played it in Charlotte, and he finished, like, before that, he finished in the top 8, and then Charlotte, he finished in top 16, losing to Patrick, who ended up finishing 9th. Like, he lost the second last round. I think that deck is like one of the most powerful decks in the format, and it's just unfair. And back in the Jund and Geist days, like, that deck was not either found or tuned to its level now.
It was too inconsistent.
And now, not only do you have the Amulet Bloom deck that I think is one of the top 3 decks in the format, you also have this new Gristlebrand deck, which I've only heard about. I don't really know how it works exactly.
It's not even a new deck, though. Like, that deck's been around forever.
Yeah.
But it's been tuned to this new level. Jacob Wilson finished in the top 16 with it. And
yeah, it's literally just what it used to be.
They've got this combo that goes off now with Shoal and Wild World Spineworm. And
I was playing that deck.
Oh, really?
Two condos ago, two houses, like two. Like,
I don't think anybody before, knew. Yeah.
Two condos ago. Playing with my buddy Nick, who I traveled with, he was sitting there shoaling my face. It's one of the reasons why I have Shoal out of the fucking. I won a, like, a random set of Betrayers at PAX 1 year. I was playing like a, what do you call it, gunslinging against, like, when they had the Magic Online live series.
Yeah.
And I was gunslinging against one of the Seattle guys, and I beat him with a Dredgevine deck, and he gave me like a Betrayers set that nobody had redeemed. So he had like a bunch of boxes of like nasty sets that nobody wanted. And I was like, oh, that's the one that's got, what the hell is that stupid card called? Jit. So I'll take that one. But yeah, it had Shoals in it. So it's like, oh, okay. So here's the green Shoal. We sleeved that up and everything like that. Cause he was playing that deck. Like, that deck was a minor thing. It was a flavor of the week.
Well, it never broke
a couple years ago.
Because I never heard about it.
It was a flavor of the week. It was crushing dailies. I think it did well in a couple online PTQs, but I don't think it ever made it paper-wise. But it was definitely a Magic Online thing for a little bit.
Okay, so it finally broke out on paper in Charlotte. I mean, like, I haven't seen this, Jeremy. From my perspective, this is new.
Yeah,
so
Bob Huang and someone else. What? God, I can't remember what his name. Played it in Charlotte. One of them top 8ed. The guy that top 8ed is a guy that I'm not saying.
Was it Namsuk?
Namsung-wook? No.
Yeah, sorry, Namsung-wook.
So Jacob played it to top 16. From what I heard from Alex talking to him, like, he only missed top 8 because of misplay, and the deck's apparently ridiculous.
Zach Jesse.
And not only that, Huey was playing this in Copenhagen. So we got some big names really jumping on board that this is probably the most powerful combo deck. I don't know why it wasn't when it first appeared a few years ago. I'd love to check out the history of this deck, actually. But now this is like one of the most powerful things you can do. So from now, we got all these unfair decks that, especially Amulet Bloom, like, I've goldfished with it. It can kill turn 3 a certain percentage of the time. So that's pretty
what's
scary.
Nice about this format, okay, is that there are cards that are in it to already regulate these things. And so we heard about this when we talked about, is Amulet Bloom too good? Is Tron too good? Like, everyone's talking about, hey, when are these things banned? You know, when are they being banned? And I mean, like, I don't know. So Goryeo's Vengeance, which is like the big one of the format, right? Like, that's what puts G Breezy into play, is an instant that costs 2 mana.
Yes.
So A, it's susceptible to discard. Okay. B, loses to both Spell Snare and Dispel. Also can be really good with, like Remand can be good against it if they go to, like, ends. But I guess this version doesn't actually have to attack with Grizzlebrand, so that's something. But, like, the Emrakul versions that were going deep, you could just Remand them out of the game, too. So, like, Goryeo's Vengeance itself, it may be a card that gets, like, I can easily see them banning Goryeo's Vengeance and fucking Summerbloom this time around. Just because, and Summerbloom also, 2 mana spell, dies, you know, gets roasted by Spell Snare. And I feel like if those two cards go, the decks crumble. But I don't even think they need to be banned. I think that just, like, both of them, you know, discard is good against them, and I just think that what these decks are going to do is when they pop up, decks like Jund and Abzan that kind of come and prey on these decks by, you know, playing interactive spoiler, that I think they're going to do fairly well.
Yeah, I think it's a little hastily to be talking about banning cards out of this freaking Goryeo's deck.
But just, Goryeo's has just been on the fringe for so long. People have been like, I'm going to get this card broken, you know, and that's all.
Yeah, and it's still a little early. Like, you can start talking the Amulet thing because it's come and it stayed, you know, but usually you'll get, like, these kind of weird combo decks that'll come in and then head right back out the door. So, yeah.
Well, I just see the same reason I thought Eggs was getting banned, even though it wasn't, like, super popular in the PTQ level. It just, like, broke certain things that Wizards didn't want to happen. And yeah. I can totally see Amulet Bloom getting banned, but it hasn't picked up. It's not even Eggs level popular, I think. Like, no one, I don't think much people were playing it last weekend in Charlotte besides Alex, and not many people were playing in Copenhagen as far as I know, so maybe it won't be an issue.
Yeah. The format corrects itself naturally right now is what I'm finding. Like, it's just, it's so screwed up. There was, like, a mono white Death and Taxes deck that was in the top 8 of Copenhagen. You know what I mean? Like, literally anything can be played in friggin' Modern.
I do predict, though, that Alex will be top 8ing Singapore with the Grizzlebrand deck, so watch that.
Wow. Okay.
Or Amulet Bloom, either one of them.
Either one. But he's got both. It's good.
I think so. I mean, he's thinking about it, but you can expect him to either go to his go-to Amulet Bloom with his medium finish of, like, 11th at any GP, or...
11th? Like, God. Seriously? Come on.
Combo.
Can't he just show up?
It's good.
This was a really good discussion that brought. Thanks, Doug. Thanks, DP.
DP. And if you guys haven't, and you guys should watch that comment because he's got, like, a pretty sweet Eminem parody rap that he throws in the end, and it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that should be our new intro song.
That's not bad, actually. We should get him to, like, really lay it down properly.
Yeah.
I think he laid it down pretty fine.
No, but like
editing and shit.
I mean, like, saying. Yeah.
Make
yeah.
it clear and nice. You know?
Yeah.
Do the other verses. Maybe we could all do a verse.
Crazy talk.
Yes, because that's what the world needs. More of us rapping.
Yes.
So, KYT spent the weekend in Providence.
Yes, I did.
He went to the GP.
Yes, I did.
It was standard.
Mm-hmm.
And you played... You didn't know what you were going to play going into this. What did you end up playing there, KYT?
Yeah, I ended up playing Devotion, Red Green Devotion.
Did you play John Stern's list?
No. We were discussing cyborg plans, but I just went with the stock list. It was the one that I was playing the most with. I wasn't feeling like a lot of John's ideas were just like we're talking about Saturday morning of the event innovations. So I wasn't comfortable going with that when Chris Fennell had won the TCG Invitational with that very stock looking list. And as you know, with our inner discussions on my deck choice, I don't really generally like decks like this just because of the high density of mana creatures. Mm-hmm. But because I've tested all the other decks, and a lot of them just like they didn't feel powerful enough, or you were just trying to eke like Megamorph eke in some matchups, trying to eke out this like incremental advantage that was small enough that really was not in some cases not forgiving if you made one minor mistake actually. So I went with something that was just gonna slam kill my opponent, though it had a somewhat sketchy Esper Dragons matchup. And the post-board Abzan match, like game one, I basically won most of my testing games against it. But game two can be tough if they intelligently sideboard in Drown Sorrows like they're supposed to. There are a percentage of games where they can straight out win because you're just like Elvish Mystic into Mystic and they Drown in Sorrow your early game and the rest of your hand is like these six or seven drops. Or Genesis Hydras, and you feel really behind because now you can't even cast those spells, and they will win a certain percentage of those games that go that way. So the Abzan deck isn't as favorable as it seems. Like post-board, it does get more challenging, but overall, it's got a great mono-red matchup. I beat mono-red. I beat Abzan. I went 6-3 on day one, losing to an Abzan aggro list, an Abzan Megamorph list, and an Esper Dragons. The Esper Dragons, so I had two buys, so round three was my Esper Dragons matchup. It went as I thought it would, a lot of counter spells and timely Foul Tongue invocation to make it so I couldn't pressure him in time for him to kill me with Ajitai. Then I rattled off a couple of wins. Mono Red just feels so good. Just like you play a bunch of Disciples and big fat green dudes and they just can't do anything. I beat some control deck in the last round. I beat an Abzan deck somewhere in the middle. But then I picked up I was 5-1 at one point. So I needed to go 2-1 in my last three rounds. I go against Abzan aggro and they just have, like, I think Brad Nelson's right in his article when he says Abzan aggro is the scariest Abzan flavor for the Red Green Devotion deck because it can actually pressure it with 3/3s.
They just, like, continually be attacking you with all of their early plays, chiseling away at your life total because you can't block because you need your guys to play your big spells. And then all the removal basically kills all of the, like, kills your payoff cards. So unless you're ramping up to a Tarka or Hornet Queen, like, you need to get that high to get past Abzan aggro, and with their maximum number of Abzan charms and stuff that they're playing too, it's not like you can even reliably block with your Deathmiss Raptors.
Yeah, so like you really sort of need that one Raptor in the middle to slow down the bleeding. Like you said, you really need to go to that. Like in game one against that that kid, I went up to a Tarka, but like I went down to 3, so he was able to like play a Windmate Rock and Abzan charm my Tarka and attack me, even though I killed like the Windmate Rock itself. He killed me with the 3/4. So I went down too low of a life. And game two was, like I said, the Drown and Sorrel type game. And then I lost an interesting game. It was a back and forth match. It went to game three against Hao Shan from MTG Mint Card, teammate of Namsung Wook. And he was playing Megamorph. And we go down to game three. where he's got Elspeth. I have a Tarka, and then like I have Ugin, but like he has a second Elspeth. It goes back and forth. But then I'm able to get a crazy advantage because my courser just ended up showing like a Tarka, Ugin, and a Tarka. So I was getting massive gas, and then I had Nissa. So it got to the point where he had nothing. One card in hand, which seemed to be irrelevant. I had Nissa, a Tarka, and an Ugin at like two. And we're in extra turns. But the problem is I'm at the classic 3 life.
Oh no.
I had this is game 3, we're fighting for day 2, and I'd already gotten rid of 2 siege rhinos. One of them with Ugin. And the reason it was so funny to me, because as he's about to draw his last card, which determines if he's like he's at 4 at this point, I attacked him with a Nissa land and an Atarka to bring him from 16 to 4. So he's and I have an Ugin, so he's like likely dead with almost any draw outside of Siege Rhino and or Den Protector. But as he's about to draw, you see like the entire MTG mint card team, including Nam Sung Wook and all these other guys, crowding around, and I'm just like, it just felt like the Bane, like the Bonfire of the Dam moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just all there on the other side. Like, I'm alone on my side, and I'm seeing this crowd of Asian guys collected in front of me as he slowly peels the top. And then I see Nam Sung Wook's face, and I'm like, oh, fuck, he got there. And Hao Shan just, like, plays the Siege Rhino, but in disappointment, as if, like he felt really bad for me that he top-decked to kill me. But I thought it was just hilarious. I'm like, oh, no. They're like, and I'm looking at not Hao Shan, but like the Asian guys behind them, like oh, like their reaction. So that knocked me out of day 2, but I finished my last game against Control and won that game in 2 games. So overall, I felt really good about the deck. Of course, a lot, like we'll talk about this later. Some of the recent spoilers, like there's a lot of game changers that came out today that makes me feel less optimistic about this deck moving forward, including the new Wrath of God that now, or Mutilate type card, which now is able to get rid of even Sylvan Caryatid that Drowned Sorrow couldn't do.
Yeah.
And can kill Whisperwood Elemental and its guys. So it's, I mean, could be very worrisome moving forward. But I felt really good about this deck for this tournament. Of course, a tweaked version of this deck ended up winning the entire thing. So I think it's still one of the top decks in the format, and I don't really regret my deck choice at all.
Yeah, I think that, I think you're right. I think the days of this deck they're pretty numbered. And I think that, if you haven't bought out Tazikers yet, you really should, because those cards are growing up. They're being played so heavily in Modern on top of everything else that they're definitely the best card to come
out
of Fate Reforged.
I'm going to buy all the foil ones on Mana Deprived right now. Or on
Face to Face? Right, you totally should right now.
Tazikers. Yeah. Foil. I'm going to buy all one of them.
Nice.
Fucking got him.
Well, balls.
Fucking got him.
I'm actually going to play my favorite sideboard card. I'm just completely just like we're getting right out of that whole conversation.
Oh, okay.
And just moving to be talking about cards that I really like. But my favorite sideboard tech that I always put in any sort of black deck these days is Imp's Mischief. So if you're an Imp's Mischief lover, good on you. If you're not, you're doing it wrong. Because the card is awesome.
So Josh McClain was 10-0. At some point during the tournament, when he was playing Abzan Megamorph, the deck is obviously still very good, and certainly one of the leaders of the format, which I thought was really interesting. But it basically, when I was watching a lot of it, like the new deck that kind of came out of that was the Jeskai Dragonlord deck.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the like Brad Nelson, Patrick Dickman sort of deck that came out, and it looks like also. Tom Ross played it at the Star City event.
Our Relax was also on it.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, that one looked okay. I mean, that felt like, you know, you've got turn 2 Stratus Dancer, turn 3 Mantis Rider. You know, like it seems pretty good. Lots of flying to blank all of the ground mid-range decks.
Yeah. Yeah, those all sound like good things.
Did you play against that at all, KYT?
No, no. Italian already thought it felt pretty sweet. Brad ended up going 1-3 or something with it, though, so not entirely sure how he felt about the deck overall. Mm. Like you mentioned, Megamorph, yeah, it had a great performance because Sigrist, Hayne, and McLean played it.
Yes.
And they all finished in the top 12 or something, and Hayne's only loss was, like, to Sigrist himself.
Yeah.
Like, the same 75, and then to, like another Megamorph deck or maybe. So he felt really good about the list, but it's not like there's not like some crazy innovation. It's just, like you said, it's been a solid deck for a while now, and it's still really solid. It looks like Megamorph is the version to stay. Like, it's stronger. It seems to be stronger than, like, the control version.
Yeah. For now, anyway.
For now. Yeah. But definitely Abzan Aggro. Shout out to P-Sams. Is definitely also still really good because of how it attacks Devotion and other matchups.
Completely agree. Yeah. Yeah, I think if you're playing Abzan, either one of them is fine. Sigrist, I know, has been playing Megamorph for some time. And so I'm not surprised to hear that he ended up toppling Hayne in that one. Just with more experience with the deck, I think. So, cool. So how was the GP overall? Was it run well? Was the venue nice? Like, did you see anybody cool?
It was run well, but the attendance was not as expected. There was I'm not sure expect is the right word because I just expect these huge GPs all the time. And now I think we only had like 1,100 people or something. I forget, which is
only.
Yeah, which is small for like what I'm used to. So it was run well. Like the rounds ended, they didn't drag long. I mean, it took the usual 45 minutes for the player meeting, but that's not something that has been done like super well by anybody anyways, outside of like the Pro Tour. So it was running really well. I still have random people come up to me just to say that they really ask me if I'm KYT and that we really love the podcast. And I tell them every time that I really appreciate that because that definitely motivates us to keep this going. And I was able to talk with... I just have more, maybe because it was smaller GP, or I don't know. I had more time to talk with some of my favorite people in the community, like Marshall, BDM, Stibbs. But outside of that, I don't think I met anyone that I didn't know already. I just spent more time with the people that I didn't know. Well, I had time. I had extra fun because the person that one of my friends came to this GP is just an online friend of mine that I've only met, including this time, 3 times. And we met on MTGO. One time he came up to Toronto to play that random TCG player tournament.
Oh, yeah.
And we share MTGO accounts where we have thousands of dollars of cards. And, like, I've only met this guy 3 times, but we have the absolute trust in each other in the world. That's where the foil Tarmogoyf comes from. It comes from him. And we just, it's just funny that we trust each other so much. And it's just great to actually see him once in a blue moon in person. He doesn't play much paper. And he bought a portion of his deck. He made a teamer homebrew for this event. Went 4-3 with 0 buys, which was a lot better than both him and I expected him to do because it's just a pure homebrew. But enjoyed, reminded me sometimes of like how this game has helped me make friends that I would have never otherwise met. So I had a lot of fun. The drive just sucked because like I'm at the point where it's getting really tiring. Like anything over 6 hours to me, like I don't know how I used to do it. I guess I had a lot of youthful competitiveness about getting that PTQ slot. And on the way back, it was just like raining like crazy at one point where we couldn't drive anymore. We just had to stay parked somewhere for half an hour to 45 minutes. So that outside of that part sucked. And the other cool thing was just to see like Alex and Pascal being there. It's like both of them neck and neck in the GP slot race, and both of them making day two. So it's like one of those things where, wow, there might be significant changes in the rankings. But what ended up happening is Alex pushed his lead up to 7 now, and a GP win is worth 8 points. So Pascal is still not dead in the water, and he's actually flying to Buenos Aires this weekend, while Alex is going to Singapore. So it's actually really hilarious if they both like make day two with good records. They'll be like checking each other's records out, and this is a fun competition going on. And then there's Montreal and Dallas, and that's it. So this race is actually really awesome.
Nice
that it's the top two Canadians. And Alex is hoping to be able to extend his lead long enough that Pascal doesn't. I mean, it's beneficial to me also because I'm working with Pascal. So if he can't make it, he might not go to GP Dallas, which is the weekend before the Pro Tour, and he'd be more available to test. But if he's in the race at all, I know he's going to play Dallas. So he's going to go to Dallas and try to catch Alex. And, you know, if he spikes a GP win, then, you know, it's anything can happen. So,
yeah, so he's 7 points behind right now.
7 points. He needs to basically, I mean, if he wit like, but his track record of non-North American GPs is really good.
I know it is.
So, yeah. Him winning is actually not surprising. So, you know, Alex is not taking it easy at all with even 7 points, which is a very comfortable lead. It's like you're telling me like the guy behind me has to win a GP to take over me. Like, I'll take that any day. So. That's, but overall, had a great, great time.
Wow. It's good. It's awesome. Jer, what did you do this weekend, man?
Well, let's see. I went and did some Friday Night Magic.
Okay.
So I sleeved up some Modern. Last week I had played Jund and did kind of started off okay, but just didn't get where I needed to. And again, that alluded to a little bit to the whole that I'm just really out of practice.
Yep.
And I had some more thoughts on that. But what I wanted to do was, you know, I saw Namsung Luke had been playing some Jund, so I put together Namsung Luke Jund, and I brought it out to Friday Night Magic with the intention of, you know, like, running it the whole weekend.
Okay.
So, played in the Friday Night Magic, and it went smashingly. Like,
so
I was
refresh,
really, really strong.
Refresh my memory. What are the main differences between Namsung Luke Jund and the Jund you were playing before?
Okay, I was playing, like, the Ari Lax Jund before.
Yeah.
So one of the differences is that this one here is running like the name. Okay, we'll go with that.
That's one difference.
This one was running Ari's was running Outpost Siege main deck. It was running Duress main deck. It was running something like for instance Four Lilianas. So like I went back up to Four Lilianas. Namsung Wooks had a Huntmaster in it. So it just had some like different things going on as far as like discard spells and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So that was one of the big differences between the two lists. So it really felt like Namsung's was just a little bit on the slower side. And that's where they kind of differed. And in the sideboard, like it was only 3 Fulminator Mages, but it had a little bit more on like the hate for affinity and stuff like that, so it played a little bit different.
Okay,
so I ran it out, and you know, I had some really favorable matchups. My very first I played up against Merfolk, and Merfolk is like such an easy deck for Jund to beat.
Yeah,
and it was very fun talking with the guy, because the guy I was playing against didn't really know how to sideboard against me, and it was just because I had played a lot of Merfolk when I was first getting into Modern. Like, that was my first Modern deck, was playing Merfolk. And playing against Jund people during Jund's heyday, and learning all the ways that they're going to kill me and why they're going to kill me. And the real trick is that if you can one for one Merfolk's Lords, they have a bunch of terrible creatures.
Correct.
So if you can put a big creature on the board, like a Tarmogoyf, and then proceed to kill all the Lords, what are they going to do to you, really? Not a whole heck of a lot. Like 2/1 that draws a card? Yay.
Yeah.
You know, the worst thing that you could run into is like a really gimped down Master of Waves if you're killing things like you're supposed to be. So it was, you know, just a lot of things like that where it's just like, I'm just going to kill things. I'm going to trade my discard spells for your Lords and life's going to go good. And the best thing that they kind of have for you, one of their strongest cards, is the enchantment that turns your land into an island, because that kind of disruption actually does hurt you. So
what is that called? Fucking Spreading Seas?
Yeah, Spreading Seas. That's the one. So Spreading Seas can really hurt you, but we just had a couple good games. Everything kind of went well, and that went good. I played against a twin matchup, and the twin matchup, it was just the case of I always played with a black-green open, even if I didn't have it, and I got into the guy's head, and he just didn't want to commit, even though I was just running the straight-up bluffs.
Nice.
So I played around like his ability. I would keep three man open to make sure that he couldn't just try and like tap my land and stuff like that. And, you know, throw out the comments and stuff like that, where it's like he like casts like I know he's got a twin in his hand. I've done like an Inquisition. I know it's in there. He goes, cast this guy, tap your one land. So I've still got black green open because I left three lands open. And I'm like, oh, I'm still good. And then he would not cast the spell and like just kept giving me these things because he didn't have a way to kind of deal with that. And it was just, you know, just playing the game of I just have to pretend and play the entire game like I've got this card and, you know, I'm going to make it true. So that's kind of like speaks to the levels of sometimes, you know, you're good in those positions. And I felt really comfortable with that matchup because I've played against a lot of twin. I haven't played a lot of Jund against twin, but I've played against a lot of twins. So I know what I need to do in order to be kind of stronger in that spot. Now, a really, really strong player will probably not fall for that stuff at all, but at FNM, it was working for me, so awesome.
Nice.
I played in a Jund mirror, and the Jund mirror did not go so well. We were just Liliana each other back and forth, and sometimes it just kind of comes down to the top decks.
Yep.
He had Courser in his deck, and Courser was kind of getting some extra action in. It was getting the job done. So just stealing the odd draw step was enough to kind of put me behind.
Yep.
So those games went well, but not well enough. So I ended up X1-ing that tournament, and that was a really nice feeling. So I felt really good for the PPTQ that was happening the next day at Red Claw.
Okay.
Red Claw was that shop that kind of started off with some odd habits, but the new ownership has just been doing a bang up job. So it's getting, you know, a lot of following. Their tournaments are getting great turnouts. I heard that they had an event with like a 32 player cap. Someone at the Friday Night Magic said, oh yeah, they still have 18 seats. So I'm like, oh yeah, I'm fine. So when I got there, I was number 43 on the list.
Oh God.
And I think they ended up firing with 42. I think they found as much room as they could. Probably got themselves in a little bit of fire marshal trouble, but they, you know, did their best to try to accommodate anybody and everybody that they could. So myself and my buddy Mike, we ended up just missing the cut, but they had a fantastic turnout. So they had Mike guys Lewis? From Calgary for it. Yeah, Mike Lewis.
Yeah, played Cuba that guy on Sunday.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so Mike's one of my buddies that I like play with all the time. He's the manager of Warp 2 in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely good shit.
So after all that work and all that testing, you couldn't even play in the PT.
Yeah, that's what it came down to.
That's gross.
And then because it was Father's Day, I chose not to play in the Sunday tournament to hang out with my daughter, which was awesome. But the Sunday tournament ended up being a 10-person PPTQ.
Ugh.
And now 10-person for a reason, and that reason was it was one of those $110 Modern Masters sealed specials.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I may have played that. Like, I think that if I had nothing else going on, I probably would have went and played that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think if it wasn't Father's Day, I think you would have had closer to 15 at least, right? Like.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, one of the big reasons why it was a low turnout was that a lot of people went down to Calgary for Adams.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, so they had an event for him on Sunday as a kind of a magical send-off. I believe his family was in attendance, and a lot of cool things were going on. I'm pretty sure you were there, Jay, right?
I didn't end up going to that. I don't know. I just couldn't handle being around that. I didn't want to.
Yeah, that would have been really difficult.
Yeah, I just, and really, like, I don't know. I just felt like
if I'm in a draft and donate the money to Royce, I'll just donate the money to Royce. I don't need to go do a draft for that. You know what I mean? Like, I just, it was just too difficult for me to be around, kind of thing. So, yeah, so I just chose to forego that. But, I mean, I did hear that it was, like, insane. You know, Doug and Gashadi and Lewis and Curly all came and cubed with me after they were done kind of celebrating Adam's life there. And they told me, like, just, like, it was packed. Like, you couldn't move, basically. And he said, you know, Watsy, they contacted Watsy, Helene Bergeau, about what happened and what they can do. Maybe if she could throw something in to kind of for prizes for a tournament or something like that. And they donated like just infinite things, like a stack of judge foils that are like the force of wills, the lands, like everything that was like $700. Like they donated foil, full foil sheets or whatever, those uncut sheets. Like three of those or something. Wow. Like just they went all out. And basically what's gonna happen is we're gonna put those on auction. And then the money is going to go to an RESP for Adam's son, Royce. And then also some of the money, I don't know if it's half and half, but some of the money is also just going to go to like the Mental Health Foundation.
Nice.
I don't know if that's the official name for it, but some mental health, like whatever the official one is, just to, you know, continue like supporting mental health and getting mental health awareness and stuff out there. So
it's really good. That's, I'm really, really glad to hear Watsy step up and,
Yeah, and they went all out. Like, it was too bad that, we couldn't get a representative, like, 'cause that would have been really cool, to get a little bit more, I guess, like, exposure. Not that, you know, an incident like this should be, a publicity event, but, like, it just would have been nice to kind of, I guess, see some of that there, just this, like, so that we could show them how much Adam did for the community, right? Like, he was Watsy Kool-Aid through and through, so.
Wow. Yeah, I hope that, I'm glad to hear that went well.
Yeah. Yeah, it went really well.
So, Jay, you said you cubed on Sunday? What is this? Doug said he cubed with you or something?
Yeah. So they came, like, Curly was coming down, and he was, I didn't know that anybody else was, but Curly said he was coming down, so. I said, when you're done doing whatever, like, let's do a cube. And, so me and Curly cubed, Doug showed up too, and Jared Gashadi and Mike Lewis. So from Edmonton. And so the only Calgary representation we had was me and, Easy O3 Rock Gig Brian Zemba.
wow. He O3'd.
Yep.
Wow. Easy.
Yep.
I know you don't listen, but if you do, shame on you.
Yeah, I think anybody that does listen that goes to, say, Phoenix or sees BZ in the near future, just you gotta just give him the rubs. You gotta. You know? Like, it's just too good. Like, it was unbelievable. He like, went back to his old five-color do-nothing, like always, and just got, like, wrecked. Like, and went easy 0-3 the whole tournament, so. But yeah, you know, typical Calgary showing against Edmonton. We just got dominated, so. Great work for us. So we cubed. It was really good. The thing that was like super fun about it was they always draft stuff that nobody else kind of drafts, right? Like, so they
get some fresh blood, some fresh ideas.
Like, and it's always, it's not so much that it's weird, but it's always like a different take on it. So like, even things like, to start off, even things like Jared Gashadi, he drafted mono red, which just wasn't being taken, and that kind of always happens. I mean, that's how mono red works, right? People always say, you know, if all of us just waste two picks picking a red card, mono red doesn't exist. So so he drafted mono red, but even like, he played traitorous blood in his main deck. So for those that aren't familiar with traitorous blood, it's one of the many threaten effects for red, but it gives trample. It's the one that gives trample, and it's from Innistrad. So that is hyper relevant because I'm playing 35 card green Eldrazi sneak attack combo. So I have 35 card deck because I have Advantageous Proclamation or something like that, which just lets me have 5 cards less in my deck. So I'm playing a ramp deck with only 15, I think even 14 lands in my ramp deck. And then I'm only playing 35 cards. And then, like, So I go turn like, I don't know, like I like, what do I do? It was like turn five. I like snuck out like a It That Betrays, right? Like I ramped out on It That Betrays. And he has like, I don't know, like the 3-1 scout that can dash on the board. And so I'm like, haha, like this guy's dead. And he's losing 2 permanents a turn. So and he has a cost. So I attack. He sacks 2 mountains. I get those back, which are super great for me because I forgot to put extra mountains in my deck because I have sneak attack, and I put it to my only red card. And I totally forgot that it needs red to activate because I thought that I thought it was like colorless, like 2 colorless or something to activate. But it's 1 red, just FYI for everyone out there. And so I steal his mountains, and I'm able to like sneak in some stuff. I'm like thinking in my head, and he goes land, untap, trade, and I have a blocker. I have like a wall of what's the battlement card that makes green?
Overgrown battlement. Yeah.
So I have that, and I'm thinking like, okay, so even if he steals this somehow, even if he attacks with like his fucking dash guy that I know he has, he also has the dash guy that copies a guy. I'm like, I'm fine. I have a blocker. I'm at low life, but I'm against the red deck, but I'm fine. I'm not in like shock range or anything. He's like, what are you at? I'm at like 14. He like does some math in his head. And then he ends up on end of my turn, playing a card to bring me down some life. Then he like kills my overgrown battlement is what he does. He attacks with 2 guys to make sure that I block, kills my overgrown battlement, traitorous bloods my It That Betrays and attacks. And I'm like, well, I'm fine. Because I have this defender, and he's like, well, it has trample, so I hit you for Xaxes because I have these 2 other creatures or whatever. And I was like, fuck! Fucking trample, like, of course. And no, and the thing that is interesting about the story, like I said, with the red, even though it's mono red, nobody ever plays that card in my cube, ever. Nobody, there's 2 threatens in the cube. I want more, but there's only 2 because nobody will ever play them for any fucking reason.
Wow.
They don't even fucking really? Sideboard into them. They never do. They never do. They're like, their reasoning is like, well, if I'm the red deck and I have to threaten your big fatty that you played, then I've already lost, haven't I? And it's like, no. If you get me to fucking 7 and I play a Palakka Worm to go to 14 and then you threaten that Palakka Worm, I'm dead because you've negated that life gain with my own Palakka Worm. And you could have killed me on board already anyway. Like, I'm dead. But they just think, like, I don't know. They're just like, well, fucking rare to do. So even Jared Gashadi did. Game 2 against Jared Gashadi. I open my hand. I don't really have a big fatty in my hand. But I do have It That Betrays. That's the only card I have that's even live. I have 2 forests. A channel. Right? So there's the combo. And then I have, like, garbage that I literally just can't play. Like, 4 and 5 drops. And that's the only land I have. I have no other ramp. I have no walls. I have nothing. So I'm like, okay, I can keep this. I go to the Doug, and I'm like, I think you keep this, right? And he's like, obviously, that's what your deck does. And I'm like, okay. So, like, even though they're, like, we can't play anything after we channel this fucking It That Betrays out, we keep it. And he's like, yeah, because he's the red deck. What is he going to do? He can't kill your fucking It That Betrays, right? So I'm like, right. So this is game 3. Jared, sorry, I said 2 earlier, but I snuck a game out of him. So this is game 3. Jared goes turn 1, Reckless Waif. Go. I draw a Drago Tree Speaker, which is basically Soul Ring. So I'm like, sweet. Turn 1, Drago Tree Speaker, go. He goes... Or no, I was on the play? Sorry, so exact same sequence, but I'm on the play. So I go turn 2. He goes Reckless Waif, go. I go land, level up my Drago Tree Speaker, tap my Drago Tree Speaker for 2. Play channel, pay 12 life to channel out an It That Betrays, and I'm like, fucking go. Like, you're fucking dead. I have Soul Ring, 2 forests, and a fucking It That Betrays. You're losing 2 permanents next turn, and you only have 2 permanents. You are dead. And he looks at his hand. He's like, fuck, okay. So then I'm at 8. He's like, you're at 8? I'm like, I'm at 8. So he draws. He fucking, of course, top decks Madcap Skills, which I only have 1 blocker now because I had to tap my Drag a Tree Speaker. He goes Madcap Skills on my Reckless Waif. Like, play Mountain, play Madcap Skills, attacking for 4. You're at 4. I'm like, yeah. He's like, go. I'm like, okay, like, I don't know, whatever. Draw any other card. Who cares? And attack you and you die? And he's like, fucking Fire Blast you, sacking 2 mountains. Fucking Hyper Blowout. So I lost that match quite quickly. But then I played against Doug was on my team. Then I had to play against John. But the interesting thing about John is that he drafted WorldNet, and he drafted it. I didn't see a whole lot of his deck. He crushed us, but he drafted it really oddly. He didn't just draft it in like the take the most powerful card and just play basically like Jund, like just every turn play a land, play the biggest guy. He didn't do that. Like, he did draft mostly that, but he also drafted cards that like he needed in his deck. So he so a lot of times with WorldNet, you're faced with things like, well, do you take this Frost Titan or do you take this utility card?
Yeah.
Or do you take this removal spell or do you just take Tamiyo? Or do you just take Inferno Titan? Or do you just take Moloku? Right? So a lot of people in the draft were like, well, why did you pass this and why did you pass that? And it was because he was trying to make sure his deck could deal with was not just, you know...
Five-color bombs.
Yeah, it was not just five-color bombs. Because five-color bombs can lose, for
yep,
sure.
Absolutely.
Especially when you have a 60-card deck versus a 40-card or whatever, right?
Yep.
So he crushes me. And then fucking Curly cheated. He has Deal Broker. So for those of you that don't know, because I didn't realize this, but there are people in the world that exist that didn't play and don't know what conspiracies are. But the Deal Broker is just a 2/3 looter for, I think, 3. And then it has the ability that when you draft it face up and you like announce that you took the Deal Broker. And then at the end of the draft, if you want, you offer a card and then everybody else can offer a trade. So let's say you're playing the green ramp sneak attack deck like I was. You can offer like Shouldred. So you're not going to try to force in and splash for Shouldred, but maybe the reanimator player or maybe like the sneak and show and tell and fucking Goryeo's Vengeance mono black. Maybe any of those decks want it, right? So you say, I'm going to throw away this Shouldred. Does anybody want this? And then, you know, Scott offers me a Moloku, or maybe, like, that's a pretty good card. But, so he offers me a Moloku, Jeremy offers me, like, a fucking, I don't know, like a sword, and then KYT offers me, like,
Doritos.
Yeah, Doritos. Yeah, exactly, Doritos. And I can then choose to trade those cards. Well, fucking Curly doesn't announce that he wants to trade a sword until we've chosen team. And then he just trades his sword to fucking John.
Because
he's a scumbag. So John
because fair.
Yeah, so John has a sword and Curly got, I don't know, some fucking bomb from his own teammate. Because that's obviously not cheating. But then Curly and Brian, I think, were fighting for the 0-2 spot. And Curly, I think, went... He might have gone 2-1, but I think he went 1-2. But Curly, the great thing about Curly is Curly plays like really complex decks that have lots of moving parts. So Curly was playing like some fucking, it was like, I think it was black, blue, green, I think. No, it was red, blue, green. It was red, blue, green. But he was like passing so many good red and blue cards that we didn't think it was red, blue, green at all. But when he built it, it was basically like a Future Sight counter, removal, and then like threat heavy, like basically rug deck. And I can't draft those decks. I love that people are drafting Future Sight in my cube, but I've never physically. It's like Upheaval. I've never drafted that card. Because I don't know how to make it good. I don't know how to make Future Sight good. Like, I'm spending 5 mana to play a card that then my opponents see every card I draw and it doesn't impact the board the turn it comes down. And, like, how good is that card? I don't know how good that card is. Like, I mean, Oracle of Moldaya is at least a creature and ramps me, and fucking Centaur or whatever that guy's name is a creature that can block an attack and gains me life. Like, and gets me through land drops. Like, I don't know how Future Sight works. But Curly always drafts these like really awesome, like lots of moving parts decks, and I'm always really interested in them. And then I try to draft them at the next like cube, and I just fail miserably. So Brian drafted 5-color, I drafted 35-card, like cheater combo, and then Doug drafted black white aggro, which was really cool. Nobody ever drafts that ever. I think that's been drafted one time before, maybe twice. So he had, you know, all the little white guys. He didn't have as much black as he thought at the end. Like, he ended up cutting some. But he took a lot of the removal, like, good removal. Like, he had swords. He had a martial coup. Is that what it's called? where it's like X mana, and if you put soldiers into play, and if X is more than five. Yeah, so he had Marshall Coup. He had the rebound sack a guy, consuming vapors. He had some discard. He had and then he had the doubling conspiracy. So it just forks a guy, like forks a spell for free. And then he also had the conspiracy that put a 1/1 counter on your guy. So he had, you know, lots of 2-drops, Knight of Glory, which is 2/1 Exalted Pro Black. He had the 2/1 unicorns that fly. He had some 1-drops, but not great 1-drops. And so yeah, he ended up 3-0-ing just by playing really tight Magic. Like he was playing the most fair deck, I think, for sure. Like we talked about earlier, Scott, with kind of Modern and how you know, if your deck is fair, like it's you're already kind of handicapping yourself.
Yep. Especially in cube. Yep.
Yeah, and especially in cube. That happens all the time in cube. So but he actually ended up doing really well. Jared Gashadi got really angry playing against Doug, which I noticed because they played a couple of matches of different formats. That's just normal between them. But like Jared didn't read the conspiracies and has never played conspiracy before. So he didn't realize that like in game one when Doug used doubling or it's like, yeah, I can't remember what the conspiracy is called, but when Doug used fork on stupor, which is discard a card at random, discard a card and then copy it. So discard four basically for 3 mana. Jared didn't realize that in game two we can switch that spell if we want. So Jared just thought after that game, like because it was a hyper blow and he was really mad, after we calmed it down and explained it to him, but he just thought that you could just switch the, like you could just use it whenever you wanted. It was basically like reveal this to fork target spell is what he thought. He didn't realize we had to like announce that before the entire game and everything, right? Which we did. Like Doug made sure, he's like, I'm sideboarding this way. You know, he's playing the red deck, so he obviously names Swords to Plowshares as his fork target, which because that's insane against red. He was against some really tough decks. There was lots of complicated board states where like he looked like he was just getting hammered down, but he ended up, like I said, carrying the team, 3-0-ing, and then I 1-2'd from some unlucky draws, and Brian like was playing curly for all the marbles and just lost all of the marbles.
No.
Yep, just fucking Peter Panned us. So, you know, but it was fun. I was really glad to get some cubing in before I probably have to sell it eventually. So that was nice. Yeah, and it was good to see the Edmonton guys. I mean, it would have been nice under better circumstances, of course, but it was always nice. It's always nice to see those guys. And now that Doug's played my cube, he said he had a really great time and he wants to play it again. So hopefully for other events, maybe they'll come down for the Origins pre-release or something and we can get some cubes going. Because I would love to play.
You could always come up.
I think that's like Edmonton's slogan, right? It's like on there, welcome to Edmonton. You could always come up, I think is theirs. But yes, you're right. I could come up. But why would I do that?
It's a nice place, okay?
Nobody thinks that.
I think it.
But I had a really great time. And the thing, too, with cube is that, like, I would love... We generally only do one, but I would love to do, like, not... It doesn't necessarily have to be a day of cubing, but, like, I would love to do at least two, you know? Because, like, I learn so much from guys like Doug and Curly, not necessarily because they're better than me, but also because, like I said, they just draft so differently that, you know, you look at, like it's like kind of when spider spawning became a deck in Innistrad, right? It's like somebody like me, I was drafting lots of Innistrad at the time, and I was just like, what the fuck? This deck is trash. Like, what are you doing? This card is garbage. Why did they make these? What are you doing over there? And then somebody figured that deck out, and it was infinite, and then that was all you faced when you drafted, was the one or the two guys that, you know, got the spider spawning deck and just there was no solve, you know? And that's kind of what these guys are like. Like Curly is always drafting weird, lots of moving parts decks, and I'm always like, oh, I didn't know that's how that card worked. I thought this card was bad. So yeah, that's the Magic I played.
Cool.
Really.
Totally cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
I've been designing lots of Game of Thrones stuff, so that's going well. In related news, KYT, who's your favorite Game of Thrones character?
Daredevil?
So, KYT has never watched an episode, not even one, of Game of Thrones, and yet he sat through and claims he enjoyed the whole Daredevil series. How is that fucking possible? Maybe that's why he liked it, because he doesn't know what good TV actually is.
Hey, I've got KYT beat. I watched one episode of Game of Thrones, so.
Yeah, so there you go.
He watched one and gave up.
That's pretty bad.
I didn't give up.
That's pretty bad. Didn't he just have a kid?
I'm not a quitter. Yeah, I just, my wife just didn't dig it, so.
Well, watch it without her.
I ain't no quitter.
Man.
I ain't no quitter.
Yeah, I think you have to watch it without her. I think that's the key here. Because it's pretty good.
It's really good.
Oh, man.
So, did any of you guys do your homework from last week?
What's our homework?
You guys had to make Game of Thrones cards for Jay Scoop.
That was never homework.
Absolutely, it was. It snap was. And you know why? You know why I know it was? Because I did my homework.
Oh, shit.
Bullshit.
Well, KYT, I don't know if KYT gets a pass or.
I got a pass. You said I got a.
Or if he gets detention. I'm not sure. Maybe,
I already made a card. I made a card.
This week's homework is like KYT has to watch episode one of Game of Thrones.
And then make a card after episode one.
Yeah.
Fall from grace.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fall from incest.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Thine eyes will burn. Okay, so I came up with an enchantment for you, since I know it's something that you wanted.
Sweet.
I don't know how to color it.
Okay.
Okay. I think that the converted mana cost on this enchantment needs to be between 3 and 4.
Okay, okay.
If you can double color it, then it should be 3. Ideally, what I'd like to see is I'd like to actually see this be, like, 2 colors. Like, it could be, like, black-white 1, or, like...
Okay.
Or, like, black-white, however you want to do it, but then I'd like, red... as the activation, so it's tough.
Okay, okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, flavor-wise, okay. This is why it's difficult for me to template, because you need to kind of, like, you have to take some leaps in terms of flavor.
Of course, yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So the enchantment is called The Night is Dark.
Ooh.
Okay?
What color is it?
What?
Oh, you said you don't know.
What I don't
color,
know.
If it was up to you, what color would you make it?
So I think it has to be black-white.
Okay.
Or, like, black red one or red.
I can change that, right? But if you give me a template, then I'm like, okay, well, I know what you were going.
Okay, so you'll understand where I'm at from, like, from the flavor perspective and where this applies. I'm just not sure. Like,
sure.
So let's talk about it. So basically, it's the night is dark.
Yeah.
And because the night is dark and there are shadows about or whatever is too long. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, it's sort of like a more appropriately referenced version of attrition.
Okay.
Which you should know, like, from Commander, it's like Commander All-Star, the black one, right? So the night is dark, and what I want to do is, like, use 1 red mana,
mm-hmm.
and you sack a legendary creature you control.
Okay.
To exile target creature. Now, So what this is... This is Melisandre's shadow birthing.
Okay.
Right? Sure. Or like it's an example of her, you know, red magic where she, like, burns the people of King's blood.
Yes, okay.
And then it, like, has this effect. So if you think back to, you know, when she destroyed Renly or when she, you know, that sort of stuff.
Spoiler
like
alert.
So it was all about, you know, the King's blood or the power within King's blood.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So
I fucking like that.
Yeah. So I thought.
But why white? Why white then?
Well, because
it should be white, like,
it's
not just
the Lord
black
of Light, right? Because, like, it's a tribute to the Lord of Light. So it's kind of like it's necromantic magic. So I like the black, but it's a Lord of Light. So I like it being, like,
and she
white.
Like, okay. And it's the argument of, like, are deeds inherently evil? Or do the motivations and ends behind those deeds make them evil? So, like, the ends justify the means. right?
Right.
So, like, is she evil because she's killing people and burning them alive and effectively murdering them, right? Yep. Like, she murders those people.
Yeah.
But she's doing it to, I mean, as far as we know, as far
in the
as
name
the
of, in the name in, of the red of the
yeah,
world
she's
of
doing
blood,
it
yeah.
to save the planet,
yeah.
right? Like she's doing it to basically because the prophecy is that R'hllor and the Lord of Light and the guy will
Azor Ahai, yeah.
Azor Ahai, yes, thank you, will save the realm from the evil walkers and shit,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
So like, oh, okay, so maybe it should be white black because, you know, flavor wise, like, is this evil? Or is it?
Well, what color do you denote the Lord of Light, right? And that's sort of the influence that I was trying to come in. So, like, very clearly, you can go two ways. Like, the Lord of Light is the Lord of Light by definition,
right.
Or the Lord of Light has always been like identified as fire.
Yes.
So it could just be red black, which fits into.
I like red black.
And then you gotta have, and you could even make it red black to activate. Like, if you wanted to be red black one to
yeah.
cast, and then
yeah.
red black sack to activate.
Yeah, and I like red black because, like, I think Melisandre as a character, she's very red. Like, she's very just like, do what you like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she's very like, she, you know, she tries to, you know, she's like Stannis's like concubine. So even though like adultery and all these things are wrong, she's like, the Lord of Light doesn't care so much about that. He wants you to care about passion and life and fire and
yeah,
blood.
Yeah.
Right. And then she tries to do John, and John's like, I don't think Stannis would like that. And she's like, well, then we just won't tell him. Like, whatever. So I like that. I like red black for that. It's very, you know, it's emotional. It's knee jerk. It's do what needs to be done for the greater good, which is black, right? Power.
Power
for anything.
Right? Yeah. Trading in power. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I dig it. I like that. That's very interesting. I like that. That might be tweaked, but I like that.
I think that the piece that you need to make sure you hold on to, flavor-wise, is that you have to sacrifice a legendary creature.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's absolutely fine. I think that's absolutely fine.
So, but you could even change it. Like, you could go... So, as an example, if you wanted to give it a couple abilities, mm-hmm. you could do this one, where you sack a legendary creature and then exile something.
Yeah,
you could even have another ability which says tap a creature you control, and like target creature, or and then target creature can't block, or something. You know what I mean? Like, there's ways that you can dink around with it to kind of, you know, you can get people out of the way, or like for example, when she, spoiler alert, when she lit the little girl on fire, it then like cleared all the weather, right?
Makes it unblockable.
Creatures you control, or like, yeah, like tap a person you control, or whatever, they're unblocked. So, anyways, yeah. But there's ways that you can use that, that enchantment to like fulfill.
Yeah.
That device like
that.
In the story.
I like that. Very good. Good homework. A+.
Yeah. First card of design that hasn't been miserable. Yeah.
Right. There you go. Boom. Suck on that, KY detention.
Got trouble.
Okay. Well, Jeremy said that he made a card.
Yeah, we did a little discussion on a card.
Okay. And... Well, why don't you tell the listeners what you did, what you came up with? Come to the front of the class.
So you kind of gave me a little bit of an assignment, just kind of saying it needed to be a Baratheon core card.
Yep.
And I did a little bit of asking, like, what's kind of going on with the set? And the way that you described it, it's like the coins and building out some things and doing all kinds of like that stuff where it seems like this is going to be like a tokeny style deck that kind of goes wide on people.
Okay.
So with that in mind, the game plan just kind of turned into what is a good go wide card that we can go with? Like, what can we do to go wide? It's a reinforcements card, Baratheon reinforcement. So what can we do to kind of justify the fact that, you know, everything is bought, like, you know, it's allies at the highest price or at the lowest price or whatever, at a price.
Uh-huh.
So went with a case of like, I try and think of in a war type scenario, what are you always doing? Well, you're looting, you know, when you go and you capture lands, you're trying to take in the resources and you take the money, and what do you want to do? Well, let's go buy more soldiers with it. So the card I came up with was 4 mana. It was a red, white 2. An enchantment, and whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to an opponent, put a coin counter on Baratheon Reinforcement. And then I did remove two coin counters from a permanent you control to put a 1-1 onto the battlefield.
Ooh, so from a permanent you control.
Yeah, so it doesn't have to be from any like, it doesn't have to be from this card. You could take coins from other places. So what it did is it has a way to generate its own coins, but on top of it, it also can pull coins from other sources.
So you can
sources.
Like, right. you can like right. spend your resources. Oh my God. So there should, so this actually from like, this from, if the only thing that this accomplishes is creating a subset of cards, which, or changing the template on some of these cards where you can now spend the coins from other permanents, that's fucking awesome.
That's like what the coin deck needs as an enabler, right? Like that's how the coin deck goes from being fair to unfair. Right?
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of looking for, was a way to spend coins.
Yeah, because if you have a bunch of cards that are like, put a coin counter on me, do something, or put a coin counter on target card, do something, but you can never like reuse those, or you can never have all like cards that already have coin counters on them be useful to the new card and vice versa, which is what sometimes can struggle, right? Like if you look at slivers, the reason slivers are good is because at any point in the game they affect what's happening, right? If you get your one drop sliver late that just gives haste or just gives first strike or just gives flying, well, that's still good if you have 100 slivers or if you have one sliver, right? Because they build on each other. But what a lot of sometimes happens is you have these synergistic, like thematic cards that like seemingly work together. But then what ends up happening is if you don't get them in the right order, they don't work as well as you want them to. So this is actually a really cool card. Because you can take it off other permanents. I like that. Because if you couldn't take it off other permanents, I don't think this card... Well, I mean...
I don't think it's strong enough.
It's not... It doesn't. I mean, we don't really know what it does yet, but or like fully in terms of the set. But I don't think it's strong enough. Like, you're investing quite a bit, and then you have to wait two turns, and then it can only make you a guy, like, on your own guy, like, on its own thing or whatever. So it doesn't feel super strong. But to be able to remove a... from any permanent, so you could play this on turn 10, and if you have a bunch of guys that have, say, 5 coin counters on them because you've been putting that on or proliferating or whatever, then you can, like, fucking make a whole bunch of guys right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's fucking sweet, actually. Wow, I like that a lot. Oh, man, and then there's also negative coin, like, Jeremy didn't know this, but there's negative coin counters in the set, and by that I just mean, like, there's effects that are like, put a coin counter on target. What's that?
Debt counters?
Well, no, but like that's a good idea, but there's coin counters that do negative things. So there's things like, if I put a coin counter on your guy, and then I can gain control of him. Or if I put a coin counter on your guy, I can do something based on how many coin counters are in play. Or I can put a coin counter on your guy, and then for you to be able to attack me, propaganda for each coin counter.
Okay.
Right? So, and that kind of comes up with, like, well, he is technically your guy. He's your soldier. But if I pay him more, is he your soldier? You know? Is he a Baratheon or a Stark? Or is he a Bannerman? Like, is he loyal to you? Or really, is he loyal to the coin? Right? So this card actually allows you to, like, get around that, where I'm like, oh, boom, fucking put a coin counter on your Hyperbot, and then fucking threaten your guy, and then you're like, in response, remove a coin counter, he can't be threatened or whatever, because you can only threaten guys with coin counters on them or something, right? So it's like it's even got like a hidden interaction you didn't even know about.
Ooh. This is so awesome.
Sick. I feel like I have to give you an A+ too.
Yes. Fuck, I'm so much better than KYT.
Oh my God, he's the worst. The KYT minus. What's that guy's name? He would be disappointed in you anyway, is what I'm trying to say. Bitch.
That is hilarious.
No, I like, actually, now that I think about it, I like your card more and more. I think that's very good. Thank you. I think that's very good. You know, it still might not be good enough at 4 mana, But that's something that I can play with internally, right? That's that happens at like 100 more times. It'll go down to 3, then it'll go up to 5, then it'll get an extra ability, then it'll lose an ability. Like, you know, that's how balancing works, because it's within a set, right? It's not real magic. So when you guys are costing cards, you're costing it in the vacuum of magic. And what does this look like if it was a real magic card? How would this be fair? You know, but if I have a bunch of zero cost creatures, well then, yeah, this thing can't cost 5, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, I like that. You guys did good work. KYT, your homework for next week is to watch a fucking episode of Game of Thrones.
Done.
Season 1, episode 1, and then make me a magic card. Any magic card from that.
Okay, sounds good.
Sweet. You guys, if you don't want to make another magic card, you don't have to. But if you do want to, you're more than welcome to.
Okay, so give me another card or another effect that you need.
Okay.
I work better with inspiration.
You work better with inspiration. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, we've already dealt with coin counters. Thank you, Jeremy. That was very good, by the way.
Hooray.
Very impressed. And we've now had this. Okay, how about this, Scotty?
Mm-hmm.
You have made The Night is Dark. Now go forth and make and full of terrors. Make a card.
Well, no, because
Told. Full of terrors. That's the inspiration you get. Make a card called Full of Terrors.
Okay, but my point was that The Night is Dark and Full of Terrors was supposed to be the name of this card, but I didn't think you'd fit it all on the card.
No, you can't. It would look like shit. Yeah, but now you can make it as if it was a split card or two cards. You have The Night is Dark. Yeah, but I have and Full of Terror. But it's not and. It would just be called Full of Terror. Yeah. What would a card look like that was full of terrors? Maybe it's Double Terror. Maybe it's unblockable because I'm so scared. Maybe it makes a bunch of horrors that are tokeny guys and they are scary bros.
Hey, bro, why so scared?
Why so scary, bro? Yeah, there's your inspiration. And I'll email you maybe a card or two to give you some ideas of what's in the set, perhaps.
I don't like this assignment at all.
Well, you don't get to pick the assignments. That's why you're the student. If you want another A+, you want to keep your A+ average, you just got to do the work, right? I'm the parent, you're the child.
Do the work.
Yeah, work.
Do the work.
Work.
Like, we don't have too much else, do we? Oh, yeah, we do. We have one more thing we need to talk about.
Perfect.
Okay. So the other thing that Doug brought up in his comment was the idea of doing a live show.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now,
I am 4 in minor quantity.
Now, here's my concern, okay? We've always been the best produced show, okay? Right. We have the best editor in the business, and the sound quality and the editing is fantastic. And I feel like we're able to really communicate, or at least sound like we're communicating as effectively as possible because of the amazing editing job that he does. But I think that catching a lot of the brain-numbing silence or, you know, whatever that comes out, I think that would, like, we would really miss that. I think that would become very prominent, and I feel like at some point in time, there's going to be some level of interaction that will be gained by being able to do that, but I feel like there's going to be this piece that's going to feel unfinished. It's going to feel unpolished and raw.
Yeah, and I feel like that was true of, like, when we did the Google sit-ins or whatever.
Yeah.
Google Plus.
We don't actually have to do video for these shows. Like, we can do just audio. Plus.
No, I know, but what I mean is just that, like, even when we did that, like, there was, like, very obvious, almost, like, I want to say, like, pauses, right?
Yeah.
Or times when, like, it was just awkward, or somebody said something, or somebody lost track of what they were actually saying and stopped talking. And then, you know, and Kyle fixes all of that for us. He's the best. Like, the show has changed days.
Kyle,
like,
is the best.
You know, like, so I think that's good feedback, actually, is like, I mean, I'd like to hear from everybody, but I think Doug, I'm sure, would like to hear from everybody, and I think he's right. Like, it's an interesting thought, but I think Scotty's absolutely right. Like, there's too much that gets cut out that needs to be cut out. It's not cut out because, you know, of time. Like, when was the last time we didn't, you know, if it was a 3-hour podcast, we gave you a 3-hour podcast, right? You know, we don't do that for time constraints a whole lot, but, you know, we do cut out for just weird pauses or silences, or, you know, when we forget something and ramble on for 20 minutes at the end of the show, you know, after we've already said goodbye, and then we say, oh, actually, no, this is actually good. Why don't we put this in the show? You know, and you can't do that with a live show.
See, the thing is that I think the way to approach this is not to actually do the A-Team stream.
Ooh,
like the A-Team podcast stream. You know, right. It should be the A-Team. It should be a separate product altogether. Yes, we lose out from the greatness that is Kyle. But maybe we can get something else out of this. Maybe we can find, you know, a way to run a show like this where we have all this, like, kind of cool stuff going on. And we don't need the greatness that is Kyle, even though the greatness that is Kyle is the greatness that is Kyle. So,
yeah.
Like, just separate product.
So I can tell you, like, putting on a stream like that with, like, production value, scene changes, stuff that comes up, like, information, that sort of stuff, like, that takes a lot of groundwork to lay down.
Yeah.
Week to week, right? So instead of Kyle doing all of this stuff in the back end, it's all being done in the front end by somebody.
Absolutely. Like, again, there's a lot to it. I'm not saying it's going to be super easy, but even like the Hangouts, if we did it like once a month, like not like all the time, but like it was just like a one-off thing, like, hey, you know, this is coming up. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, we could do all kinds of stupid shit together in the sense of, like, we could draft. We could have one person put the draft up on the screen and we could argue over picks. We could do all kinds of, like, just really cool things. I'll play, like, Team Geist to an event or something like that and kind of go on about this stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, like, and we've done that in the past, right? Like, we've done Commander games on Modo. We've done the Google Plus Hangouts. You know, like, there's been talk in the past of, like, almost like a Patreon, where, like, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, but I believe, like, Patreon kind of works like Kickstarter, where there's, like, different levels get you different benefits.
Yep.
So we've had, like, talks of that in the past, of, like, we could do a Patreon where one, like, the top X supporters at X whatever dollar amount or whatever we choose, would be able to get, like, the podcast early, like, unedited and early, which is effectively the exact same thing. We could do, you know, like, a stream of the podcast. The problem is just that, like, my issue, and I'd like still to hear from KYT and anyone else that has any more, but my issue is just, like, why would people listen to the podcast if they can listen to the stream?
So I think the piece to consider with that, too, is that by doing it as a stream, it alienates the people that listen to it later.
Yes.
Because we'll start laughing about something, and we may, like, say what is being said in the chat, but I think that, like, seeing it live and seeing it and hearing our reactions to it live as it happens, like, that's worth more, I think, than, you know, it's going to come off differently.
I feel like you could miss stuff, like, so everyone's talking about, you know, the show on Monday, but you don't get to listen to it as a podcast because you missed the stream and had to work or whatever until Thursday.
Yeah.
And now, like, you feel like you missed something. But right now, you don't feel like you've missed anything because everyone's missing something. You know what I mean?
Agree.
Right, right.
Does that make sense? I don't know.
That makes sense.
So why don't you guys tell us in the comments? That's what I would really love. So if you guys think...
Video comments.
Video comments.
Tell us in the video comments.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want us to do that, then we could certainly do that. If you want to see it every now and then, you want us to run a test one, like, we can do all of these things. You know, it's going to be pretty easy for me to, you know, actually just run the stream from the Skype call. So that, you know, I could certainly do that. I've got all of that set up. So that's a non-issue. But yeah, let me know what you guys think. Tell us. Tell us all! So, let's do that.
What do you think, KYT?
No, I'm just saying, because we've tried it a few times, and I'm not entirely sure of the response. I was telling Scott before the show, I would like to know what our fans think. I mean, part of the reason we were able to safely move to Thursday was because we had a lot of good feedback behind that. Like, we're constantly, right now, it actually feels good that I'm talking about Providence that just happened. I just came back from Providence, like, a bunch of hours ago instead of, like, far later, and now we're not.
Yeah, and we're talking about Providence on Thursday, and it's coming out Monday, which is officially, like, a full week after.
Right, and now people are appreciating that. There's been, like, zero complaints about that, so I'm really curious about the feedback. Like, Doug mentioned it, but maybe he wasn't aware of all these other issues or other angles. So, would be interesting. Like, I was happy when we had Hangouts because I think some of the episodes, I had a lot of fun. I remember, like, it was just funny because you're just bitching all the time about
somebody.
Like,
somebody the other day, like earlier this year, sent me a link and was like, "Remember this or whatever." And then I watched like part of this fucking Google Hangout, and the whole time I was either like, "Oh my god, this is so fucking stupid," or I was laughing so hard I had to pause it and was like crying, basically.
Yeah, it definitely had its moments, and we definitely had a lot of people that I remember people like commenting on, but it was sort of confusing how Google Plus had done it because it was split between Google Plus and YouTube. It was still like a little confusing thing, and but it was cool to see like the live commenting, and I'm not sure, but. It was definitely fun. We never did it with Jeremy. We did it during the Medina era. And for me, what's most important is what our listeners think. And that's it.
Okay.
We love you. You're the best. And Jeremy, I just realized, you know, Nam is his last name.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's common, right?
No. So is it Sung McNam?
Yeah. It's like, no. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's actually Sun Wook. Like, his Sung Wook is like me, my Car Young. His Nam is my Tom, so.
His Nam is my Tom.
That's why when you were calling him Nam Sung, it's as if you were calling me Tom Carr, basically. We mixed it up, Jer. We mixed it up.
Well, SWN. It's pretty badass.
All right.
I don't know. I like Nam Sung Wook.
Spirit Animal.
Spirit Animal.
Well, I had people tell me that. I was at GP Providence, and my friend Xavier, my Pro Tour teammate, just like thought that was his favorite line of the show. And I didn't even like talk to him. He just like, that was too gold, and started making other people listen to that exact line. They're like, so stupid.
Well,
good job.
I'm glad that people enjoyed it. I hope that we brought some more people into the show. Oh my goodness, whatever you just linked is brilliant.
You like that?
Do I like it?
Yeah.
No, I think it's brilliant.
That doesn't mean so you hate it?
I don't know. I just, like, what is going on with this deck?
It's so busy.
It's so busy. Like, the sideboard is just like a crack addict.
So, sorry, for those of you wondering, okay, so I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to play on my stream this week, and somebody linked this to me this morning,
play this.
And I'm 100% playing Tribal Flame Zoo this week. So I'm looking at this, I'm looking at, like, tweaking it a little bit. Like, there's some cards that I want to get.
This deck is tweaking already.
Well, so it's really exciting. It's one Bird of Paradise, four Noble Hierarch. You got four Wild and Cattle, four Tarmogoyf. And then you've got four Geist of St. Traft, three Goreclan Rampager. So there's that combo. Four Siege Rhinoceros, and two Tazigar the Golden Fang. 22 lands. The spells are two Path to Exile, two Bant Charm, four Bolt, four Tribal Flames. So it's cards that I don't like in here. Like, I understand the utility of Bant Charm, but I've never liked the fact that it costs 3 mana for any of those effects. Tazigar is not fast enough. So I feel like I want to... I think the only change I want to make is I want to change the 2 Tazigars to Snapcaster Mages, and I want to cut the 2 Bant Charms and make them Abrupt Decays.
But this Tazigar with like the land base, like the fact that it's like 12 fetch lands and then one of each of the shocks, like makes Tazigar a little bit more real.
Yeah, I thought about that too. Hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second.
No.
No, I will not.
I refuse to hold on!
All right, guys, I gotta go. I gotta go.
Where did he go?
I gotta go. I gotta go. There's a tornado apparently coming to my house. I gotta be in the basement. My wife and daughter just came down, so I gotta go.
Okay.
Goodbye.